Hey y'all, I'm Anthony.
And I'm Fiona.
And this is
That's Some Talk, a podcast where we dish about wine
and serve the tea on one little episode.
And today we're talking about
sustainability. Plus like an Albarino and agave that we drank. So here's the episode.
Actually remember Mike Trek that much. I do remember having a huge crush on the audio guy that we always hired to come in for the show. But then at a certain point it was all my friends. Like I was, because I was a theater kid, like I was friends with the
techies. Have you tried this, by the way?
I smelled it and it smells like really delicious.
Yeah,
like...
so it is, it's an Albarino. I think it's Portuguese, though.
And probably because of the H.
Yeah, and it's, well, it's Alvarinho. It's 2016. It is not aged, not oak aged, medium bodied. It says floral notes, dry crisp with citrus and minerality. They recommend serving it at 53 degrees Fahrenheit. Is that right? Sounds a little...
sounds a little warm, but I think that's fine for certain white wines.
I had this wine. I didn't drink this wine. Attempted that yesterday. I tried the other one, kind of warmer. Not because I wanted to, but because I just let it sit in front of the heater for too long. Obviously, it says it recommends fish and seafood, which I just think makes sense for
almost all white wine.
Yeah, come on. But what I like about this, like, as a medium-bodied white wine, is, like, I think with white wines, people usually like light-bodied. I think that's, like, what you think about, like, a Sauvignon Blanc, just, like, grassy, like, light, like, pool time, like, summer.
Or you think about Chardonnay.
Yeah, which is gonna be, is Chardonnays are usually, like, more, like, medium-light, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, it can kind of depend. Like, I, when I think about, like, Napa Chardonnay, when it's, like, oaky buttery, I would say that's more, like...
it feels heavy.
It feels really,
I don't know,
heavy on the palate.
Yeah, like, it definitely... it's always interesting, though, when you have that and someone's like, no, it's still, like, a medium-bodied grape.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, definitely anything that's kind of, like, oaky like that. Like, what's that wine that we hate?
Roussan.
Right. Like, is that... that's probably considered, like, a heavier-bodied white wine.
Yeah.
And probably, like, certain Jura white wines are probably more heavier-bodied, too. Just, like, with the way in which they, like, hit your palate. But, obviously, like, another well-known, like, medium-bodied white wine is, like, Chenin Blanc. And Chenin's, like, all over the place. Like, I've had Chenins that are, like... bready and kind of like champagne-y, and I've had Chenins that are like my, like what I more like in a Chenin is forgetting the flavor profile. I like Chenins that are like stone fruit, like kind of like limestone, but I think that like an Albarino like this is definitely just like an everyone person wine. Like it's really easy to sell people on this because it's fruity. If someone says, like, one thing that you taught me is like, if someone's saying they want sweet, give them something like this because this is more what they're asking for.
Yeah, like they, a lot of the time, unless someone's directly asking for Moscato, if somebody's asking for like a sweeter wine, they're asking for fruit. Which is why Albarino is great. I actually really like the nose on this.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely, like, I get a lot of those floral qualities, but then it's also, like, I wanted to call it, like, oxidized a little bit.
It's definitely, it's kind of lemony, too. But it's not, it's floral, but it's not herbaceous.
It's not. It's, like, walking through, it's, like, summertime walking through, like, wildflowers, or, like, I'm thinking of honeysuckles. You know
when honeysuckles
first come out?
Yes. The color's like apple juice, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah, like a pretty golden-y yellow.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
What's our objective, subjective, Anthony, Fiona, 0 to 5 stars range on this?
I would say solid, like, 3.824.
Like 3.2. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, we should let people know that at the deli where I shop at the Heights in Lincoln Heights off of Broadway, it's a really great deli with a really cool wine and beer selection. And this is being sold there for, before tax, $18 for the bottle. So really agreeable price point too. Mm-hmm. This is something you could like have just like stocked at home, like show off to all your friends, but it's not going to like break your bank whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You know, in a restaurant, if you were buying this wine, like by the bottle, you're probably buying like what, between 40 to 50 bucks on the menu.
Maybe, by the bottle?
Maybe a little bit more. 50 sounds normal.
I would say 50, 60.
Yeah. Which is usually, like, what our price, like, what we go for price point-wise anyway when we're out to eat and stuff.
Like, that's, like, a very, like, run-of-the-mill bottle price.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, like, when they're a little afraid of wine, they're not ready to, like, go out of that, like, $5 to $15 range. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, once you get, like, even a couple dollars outside of 15, like, to the 16...
Quality! Immediately!
Huge jump in quality.
Yeah!
And, like, I know it hurts at first, but, like, once you start, like, you know this, Anthony, like, mm-hmm. you're just, like, totally in it now.
Right. And also, like, this is also to say the reverse is true, where, like, you don't need to be buying $25 to, like, $35 bottles mm-hmm. of wine either, because, you know, in that same direction, like, it's probably going to be, like, cool and delicious, but... I think when we talk about, like, whether or not a wine is good, like, money has to matter, like, because mm-hmm. value matters. And it's like, well, there was that recently, that story of, like, Chrissy Teigen being swindled and having accidentally ordered a $13,000 bottle of wine.
What?
Yeah, it happened on Twitter. She got, like, called out on a, like, kind of leftist Twitter, who I stan. I need to make that known. Basically was like, F you, Chrissy Teigen, like, you're just, like, talking about this, like, crazy story where you're out to eat with John, and y'all go to a restaurant, and you were recommended a great bottle of wine, and you didn't even ask how much it was, and it just landed on the check, and it was $13,000. Like, while I'm here...
$13,000 or $1,300?
$13,000. Did Jesus. I not say that? It's $13,000. And, a lot of people kind of called her out for just being kind of, you know, rich, and they're, you know, we're in a pandemic here mm-hmm. and they don't have gigs, and it's like, this is not the thing to complain about. Some people kind of took the more, like, kind of like, how did this happen approach. Like, a lot of service industry people were like, well, was it, did the server switch with another person who, or did the server accidentally entering the wrong bottle of wine, it just ended up on the check. And I kind of read ahead, like a New York Times or something headline the other day mm-hmm. that was like, we're not asking the right question. The right question is, well, how was the wine?
Yeah.
And it was probably, you know, it was probably fine.
Yeah.
It was probably fine. But to say something tastes like $13,000 versus something tastes like $20 and like the quality between the two, I don't know. You'd have to ask a Master Sam about that, but that's also not us.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. That's also, like, I mean, again, like, don't quote us. Like, I'm not I don't have my Psalm 1 even, but I find, like, once you start getting into wine that expensive, it's more like collector's items. Like,
yeah,
it's less about the quality of the wine, because also, like, quality of wine does diminish after a certain number of years.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to drink it at, like, a certain point if you're going to drink it.
Right. Like, you would not age organic or biodynamic wine. That's just not the point.
Not at the same rate.
Yeah. And, like, people are not buying those wines in cases to hold. Mm-hmm. Like, those are, like, they're organic. You're literally buying those wines to enjoy them soon after buying them, like you would anything that you buy at a farmer's market. They're not going to be these products that you keep on your shelf. In terms of wine as investment, that's like a whole different thing.
That's a whole ball game. Like, that's the thing of, like, investing in the stock market. You know, it's like, I have a bunch of extra money on hand and I want to put it into something valuable. What do I put it into?
Well, yeah, it's like Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin was, like, always supposed to be used as, like, a tool to, like, use as currency that would be, like, devoid of nation state. And so people from Argentina who, like, might, you know, think that their currency might go all over the place based on how many kind of, like, financial crises they've had in a short amount of time could instead, like, invest in this currency that might be, like, kind of considerably less volatile. However, people utilize Bitcoin like, you know, a savings tool now. It's right. It's like equity. I am into wine equity. I think that is really cool. Like, I do have, like, a Vinovest account where you can, like, put in some cash and, like, a sommelier, like, handpicks, like, wine for you, and that they kind of store it for you, too. And you can, like, choose to either, like, execute your shares, or you can literally have the wine, like, mailed to you, and you can, like, drink it. But, yeah, I wouldn't want to be drinking something so expensive. I would... It goes in one end, comes out the other. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I also, like, not that I don't understand, like, investing in wine, but I find it to be, like, dick measuring a lot of the time, too. You know? It's like, well, I have the, you know, 76 Barolo from, you know, wherever, and it's like, cool, bro. Like, just gonna sit there on your shelf. Awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, for me, that's not where enjoyment of wine is. It's in... And this is a little like silly. It's definitely in the like enjoyment with friends and family, and like that's the whole thing about like this organic biodynamic wine, natural wine movement. It's about enjoying the wine with your friends.
Right.
And that's like that's my whole thing. It's like I don't want to like sit around and stare at all of my bottles and bottles.
Is there a way we can tell if a wine is biodynamic without, like, looking it up?
It's different for international wines.
Yeah.
It's pretty explicit on... it's pretty explicit on American bottles, but that's also because, like, the way that you grow things in, like, let's say, like, Italy, and, like, the way that you... make wine specifically in Italy tends to be more what we would consider here like natural.
Yeah, got it.
You know, like the process, they don't add like lots of extra sulfites or like, you know, any preservatives, which is also why kind of it's hit or miss with a lot of Italian wine.
Are some level of sulfites normal though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sulfites are naturally occurring in wine.
Yeah.
But it's the additional sulfites that you know, like, it's human intervention as opposed to, like, sitting around and seeing what the wine's going to do on its own.
Yeah.
You know, and there's merit to both. Like, there's merit to, like, the more scientific approach and to the natural wine approach, which is my favorite, where it's, like... Brad Leone on Bon Appetit, where it's like, just ferment things and see what happens. Although, okay, I know we canceled him, but...
Yeah.
But I feel like the metaphor stands.
Yeah, totally. We're just enjoying.
It's really delicious. Like, I taste the floral notes on the palate, too. And it's also, like, really, like, citrusy crisp. It's like...
Yeah.
Lemon rind. Like yeah. Lemon peel.
Yeah, and the finish is like pretty clean.
Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't really. It definitely has acids.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who don't know, acids are like what makes your mouth water, mm-hmm. and tannins are what makes your like tongue or mouth dry.
Yep.
And when a wine's balanced, it's usually working within the parameters of both. That's correct, right?
Yeah.
In terms of balance. So,
although, like, that is also, like, why certain wines work better with certain foods.
Right. This wine definitely makes, like, my mouth water. It's, like, a little tannic on the tongue, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the finish, it's, like, not literally lingering on my palate, like, once I drink it. It's just kind of, like... Which is, I guess you could kind of say, like, a short finish.
Yeah.
Short, medium.
Yeah.
Lingers a little.
I think that I think it's a bit longer. It's not, like, it's not coating your mouth in sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what, like, the sugar is kind of what, the residual sugar kind of is what, like, is the finish. It's, like, it does it, like, kind of
linger on your tongue or does it kind of dissipate? But I'd say, like, flavor-wise, like, maybe it's just because I'm, like, literally swishing it around my mouth. Like, I definitely taste, like, the stone fruit on my palate even after it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. It's, with finish, is it more, is it a mixture of all those things? Flavor, tannic?
Like, well, it's, like, flavor and body.
Okay. Got it.
Like, and, like, body, again, my understanding is, like, it's about the residual sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the length of the finish is about the residual sugar, not necessarily the body.
Got it. Is this, like, a wine that you would aerate at all?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, me neither. Usually with, like, aerating, I do it if the wine's weird at first. And I do it not because I don't like the wine at first when it's weird, but usually because if it's something like petrol on the nose, that usually means it just has to, like, wake up a little bit. And mm-hmm. I honestly love the journey of that. So I'm usually, like, aerating more with red wine than I am with white.
Yeah, but that's, again, like, if you were going to do it with white wine, it would be Burgundies or, like, certain Riesling. Well, not all Rieslings. Like, when you talk about,
like, an orange.
Yeah, like an orange wine.
Mm-hmm.
Might need a little time. Honestly, like, I always think about, like, Jura would need a little time to open up.
And Jura is like a region in eastern France
mm-hmm.
that produces some funky AF wines.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fun. With white wines and, like, dessert wines from there, I always feel like it's a lot of, like, nutty raisin kind of qualities to them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're looking to explore your palate within the world of wine, I definitely recommend. You're gonna spend a little bit more on them. They are, like, a little bit more pricey, but that's definitely a great place to see how weird wine can get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a good. I'm pretty sure it's in Burgundy.
Like Eastern Burgundy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's between Burgundy and Switzerland. Yeah, so it's like. It's kind of, like, Burgundy adjacent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Was I not right to say Eastern or...
You were. I just, like...
I think someone else told me that.
No, I mean, that's definitely right.
Okay, good.
I
cool.
just, like... I always... Whenever I think of Jura, I just think of it within Burgundy, but it's not, like, technically within Burgundy. It is expensive, but it's weird and fun.
I'm just not, like, a slurper.
You don't know... Do you know how to do it?
No.
Yeah.
How do I do it?
I'm not great at it. I'm honestly, like, not even sure who taught me how to do it.
Do you put it between your teeth?
Mm-hmm. Like, if you're...
Like, mouthwashy?
I like to do the mouthwash method, actually, where it's, like, a little bit, like, I sip it in and, like, it's like I'm pulling air over my tongue. Mm-hmm.
And what's the benefit to doing this?
It's aerating it in your mouth.
Got
and it's
it.
Also, like, yeah, so, like, as the air kind of, like, goes over your tongue and, like, with the wine, it, like, changes the flavor.
Is this something that you're doing more when you're going through a round of tasting, like, in the industry, or is this something that, like... When, say, you and I are out to dinner and we order a bottle, is this something that we're doing throughout the meal or just at the start?
You know, it's, like, totally up to you. You can do it throughout. Like, and it's also, like, really common to do, like, in a, like, non-industry setting of tasting. Like, when you're up at a tasting room, like...
Is the goal of it to see... Like, expediting to see how the journey of the wine's going to move throughout the meal? Or is it to get the full sense of the profile in a short amount of time?
The latter.
Yeah, got it.
It also, like, the different spots on your tongue taste different, like, things.
Got it.
So, like, moving it around the different, like, parts of your tongue, like the mouthwash method, it's nice because then you get different aspects of the wine.
Mm-hmm.
I always forget her name. I should really know her name at this point. But there's like a whole bunch of people who will tell you like different ways of like swishing.
Nah, I got it.
And especially if you end up taking your Psalm 1. Like, I've read the Psalm 1 book. Like,
yeah. That's something that we should, like, have for future episodes. It's just, like, other people's, like, little insights that we can just read off and mm-hmm. credit the homies, the mm-hmm. wine homies. I'd say after this, let's cork this for now. Let's move on to something else. We can move into the other shitty wine I have in my fridge.
Awesome.
Yeah. Cool. I'll let you hold on to yours. I finished my glass.
Yeah.
We're going to transition. Mm-hmm. So I'm pouring for Fiona. And y'all don't really need to know this because unless you work in restaurants and you care. But I'm doing open hand service.
No, you're not.
Well, I'm not. No. So I'm facing her left hand side. So I should be pouring from my like farther away mm-hmm. arm. Which is my left arm.
It's like you're coming in for a hug.
Yes. And I have the label pointed towards her. And then you're supposed to do it with one hand. Or just two hands. Can you do two hands? Is that okay? Or
no.
No.
I mean, if it's like a Magnum, sure.
Right.
Like, and I think with the gloves that we have to wear because of COVID, yeah, sure.
Right.
Do whatever you need to do to get the wine in the glass without spilling right. the bottle.
But you're supposed to do one hand. I have a bigger hand, so I just grip the whole base and I just...
There's also the whole thing about the...
the thumb yeah. in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I you can put the thumb into the
some of the
bottom middle.
It's called the ain.
The what?
The ain.
The ain.
Like the ass. some of those little holes are bigger, so it's easier.
Yeah.
And it's actually, like, one of my preferred methods. If you have, like, a really big, like, divot in the bottom, yeah. I actually get a better grip.
Yeah.
Personally.
And then as you're pouring, you try to get to the meniscus line, which is like the line with which the wine kind of is the most, how do I say, the glass is the most bulbous. And that takes a little practice to kind of get good at, but that's usually around like a 5 ounce pour.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just, it's a little flick of the wrist up. And that usually helps stop the wine from dribbling on the wine from dribbling onto the bottle.
I'm terrible at it, so I always have a napkin in my hand.
Yeah, which you would then use yeah. to, like, wipe the top. But now we are drinking cheers.
Cheers.
Which you also always should be doing eye contact with, people. Do you agree with that? Whatever. Just trying to bait the
yeah.
audience.
I'm the worst for that. I'm like, sure, whatever. Yeah, divisive.
Yeah, I don't care too
much. I'm so divisive.
This wine is called a... Gavi?
I know. I love Gavi.
So you love Gavi.
I've never had Gavi.
I've never had Gavi.
So, like, my whole thing with, like, coming into restaurants and, like, getting into wine was I worked at an Italian restaurant. So, like,
right.
I do have, like, some weird knowledge about, like, Italian wines.
So is Gavi the grape?
Yeah.
Okay, so Gavi's a grape. This wine is Principessa Gavia. It's from 2019.
Principessa Gavia.
Principessa. It's from 2019. The producer has some other words on it, Doc G and Bonfi.
DOCG.
DOCG. Is that the...
That's the the level of, like, quality of the wine. So, especially in Europe, like, every, country has its own way of measuring quality of wine. With Italy, it's DOC, DOCG, and then there's another one that escapes me right now. I'd have to look it up.
Yep.
But so, like, there's three levels, it's like, I know for France, it's like dénominisation contrôlée, opinisée. So it's like something similar to like that sort of basic table wine to like the more like expensive wine, and then there's like the really high quality wine.
Uh-huh.
And it's like it's about like where the grapes come from, the quality of the grapes, the house that's making them.
Yeah,
you know, like anytime you would see
is Bonfi the producer, you think?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. probably the name of the family who owned the vineyard.
I'm going to read the description at the back of the bottle. I might truncate it. We'll see. It's kind of long. In the 6th century, Principessa Gavia fell deeply in love with a soldier. Her father, Clomidier, King of the Franks forbade their marriage. So the lovers eloped to a remote village in northwestern Italy, which would be like Turin, right? Charmed by the local white wine, the newlyweds revealed their identity and were brought before the king. But when he discovered their happiness, he forgave the couple. The king blessed their The king blessed their the union, but there is spelled like possessive there, and named for her both the village and its wine, Gavi. Dry, fruity, with crisp acidity, Principessa Gavi Gavi is an ideal marriage to seafood, chicken, or veal.
Yeah. Because veal is so light and, like, it's supposed to be, like, so much more, like,
is veal a little delicate. Is veal a little gamey?
No.
It's not gamey at all?
No.
I've had veal. I feel bad. Baby cows. I mean,
moo.
Got feel bad for it.
Moo, 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 moo.
Got moo or got morals, people?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, do you want to eat foie gras or not?
Yeah,
like...
no, I know. I'm not a vegetarian. I'm not a vegan.
I want to go off on my diatribe. I'm like, if we're gonna like split hairs about like poor baby cows, like, can we talk about like the industrial meat complex and how we treat the adult cows also? Because I would rather have that be a change.
I would rather. Yeah, it's just the mass production.
Mm-hmm.
I'd eat meat if it was more. I do eat meat, but I would feel more comfortable declaring my okayness with eating meat if the whole thing was more sustainable.
I mean, like, I really enjoy like making pork chops, but I don't want to buy a pork chop at the grocery store. I want to buy it from the farmer at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
And like spend $50 on the two pork chops.
Yeah.
But I know it's going to be like great.
Right. And then just offset the rest of your diet with like more like kind of veggies and whatnot. And just, yeah, I like to feel like I'm, you know, I do go to McDonald's and stuff, but, like, I want to stop.
I'm sorry, that was about the wine. That wasn't about you.
Let's talk about the wine.
How long has it been open?
So I received this from a friend 2 days ago, but she had it corked. So I have no idea how long she'd been drinking it for. Does it feel a little flat?
Well, the nose is, like, really funky. Like, it smells like old cheese.
It might be your wine glass. I doubt it, but does it smell like mine? Okay, good. Not good, but like at least we know that my wine glasses are... I try to make my wine glass neutral smelling when I clean them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just think it's like, it's got funk. So it's like, it's either been open for a couple days.
Which is interesting because on the palate, this thing's pretty neutral.
Yeah.
It's like... It's kind of giving me watered down Sauvignon Blanc vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely herbaceous, grassy, but like it's not astringent.
When I think of Gavi, I always think of like green apple, and like I'm not getting it really as much in this one.
Hmm. Me neither. A little. It's like that aligote we had, but like really watered down. We an aligote is a non-Chardonnay grape from Burgundy.
It's the one and only white grape that they grow there that's not Chardonnay.
Yep, and the one that we had at the store that we worked at together was like super green apple-y.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the essence of it, but it's not there at all. Still, I don't mind this wine. This is not a wine I would buy. Not that I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I just, I think me profiling myself as a wine drinker is, like, with white wine, I either like, super, like, mineral, like, oysters, like, limestone, kind of like a Chablis or, like, a Chenin Blanc kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to want, like, fruity, rounded, kind of like certain Chardonnays or, like, the Albarino we just had.
Yeah.
This wine is just very kind of like, it doesn't, mind you, we did not open this fresh, so it's hard for us to like make a whole assessment on it, but like.
It kind of hurts my brain.
This like, wine's right just going to get me drunk.
Yeah.
This wine's, like, I'm going to drink this and not think much about it. It is super chuggable. This wine is super easy to just not think about.
Yeah, to check out from. Yeah. If you're just like. honestly, this is a totally fine, like, lunchtime wine. You're having, like, a Niçoise salad or, like, you know, maybe like, a Tricolore. So, like, let's stay with the Italian theme. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, you have all of those sort of bitter greens from the Tricolore. Like, having this with it, and especially if there's, like, cheese in that salad. I think this
is a good table wine, for yeah. sure. Like, if I was in Italy and they were, like, okay, red or white, mm-hmm. like, I don't know Italian, but, like, Blanco, you know.
Bianco.
Roja. And I was like, white wine, please. Uh-huh. And they served me this. I'd be like, this is fine. This is totally fine.
Yeah, I could drink like 4 carafes of this and yes. not think about it. Yeah.
This, yeah, if I, because table wine is also an art form.
Yeah.
And when certain places do table wine better than others, for sure. Because, you know, we talk about, like, the spend of wine. Sometimes you're broke, and mm-hmm. you're out to eat, and you're like, I'm just going to do the table wine. This would be, like, this would be great. And mm-hmm. I don't know if that's me being mean to this wine. I don't know what this wine retails at. I did not buy it. My friend gave it to me. But it's a 2019. This was probably I would guess this is between a $9 to $15 bottle.
I wouldn't even say 15. I would say, like, this is definitely...
Because of the taxes we have in Los Angeles.
$11 wine.
Let me check. I just pulled out my tablet, and I'm going to do Principessa.
Principessa.
Gavia. Bonfi. Ooh. This wine's a little pricier than we guessed.
Is it, like, 18?
Yeah, it's in this category. On wine.com, it is being sold for around $18. Yep.
This is definitely food wine, though, because it's already kind of making my stomach hurt.
Yeah. The winemaker notes...
Which could also be because it's been open for a while.
Yeah. Winemaker notes say that this wine is a pale straw color.
Yes.
That's correct. I'd almost say it's a little bit more, like, water-looking-y, like... It's a little, it looks like if you had a cucumber sitting in water for a while and then the water took to it a little mm-hmm. bit. It also says the bouquet is intense and fresh with aromas of pineapple and green apple.
I did not get that.
We didn't get the pineapple for sure. I mean, we said green apple.
Yeah, but I only said green apple because that's what I always get from Gabi.
Yeah. It's definitely was there in essence. It says it's well balanced, which I'd agree with. It says gentle acidity, delicate dry finish.
I don't think it's gentle, right? And I think it has to do with how long it's been open, not to cast shade, but...
Yeah, I mean, this wine wasn't... The air wasn't taken out of it. It was just the cork was put right through the top. Take the air out of your wines, folk.
Oh, yeah.
Buy one of those cheapy vacuum-in corks and take the air out of it.
It's so cheap. It's, like, less than $20. You have the tops and the vacuum sealer.
Yeah. Maybe in our... Maybe we're the podcast that, like, puts, like, notes in our Amazon affiliate list.
Yeah, for sure.
Buy our shit, buy things.
Buy things from Amazon.
Buy things with our, Amazon is a great, ethically awesome company that treats their workers amazingly.
So well.
Yeah. that's me being facetious. But anyway, buy shit from our, buy stuff. Sorry, I'm trying not to, like, have too much of a sailor's mouth on this podcast, but buy stuff from us because we are two service industry folks who have been out of work
for far too long
without our choice.
Yeah.
This podcast is kind of fun too because it's almost like, especially if we didn't drink before this podcast, it's like the progression of us. Like if we do flights, like if we have 3 wines set up.
Oh yeah, no. Like, at the very end of it, like
weirder stuff might kind of come out.
Yeah, suddenly I'm gonna be like just like yelling about random things.
Yeah.
We're gonna be talking about socialism. It's gonna be great.
Honestly, I want our podcast to just go there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm down.
Yeah.
I ventured back.
Let's do the very subjective Anthony and Fiona. Oh, she ventured back to the Albarino.
I was like, I need the Albarino in my life. 0 to 5. You go first.
This is giving me very, like, 2.5 okay. out of 5. And I'm saying this because we're drinking this wine. I'm rating this wine not based on its potential, but how we're receiving it, mm-hmm. which is anything in life. You can have so many people buy, like we were saying with wine aging, some people age it too long. Mm-hmm. Like, this can affect everything with a wine. So this is how I'm receiving it right now. And also, the reason why it's the really middle ground for me, a lot of wines that we rate are totally going to be within, like, the 2.5 to 3.5 level. And that's because with wine, things can get really, like, it's hard to say that something was, like, the best ever. And it's also something, it's hard to say it's something was the worst ever. Because at the end of the day, this is just alcoholic grape juice.
Yeah, I can't say that I would ever give a wine a 5 or a 0.
Yeah, it'd be really impossible.
Yeah.
If anything, if I ever say a wine is in the 4 category, you know that I'm, like, in love with this wine.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll definitely have wines on this pod that are like that, because Fiona and I, like, already, there are some wines that we already know from top of memory that, like, we talk about, like, on a daily, weekly level.
Lo-fi
is one of the producers, also Crunchy Roasty.
Crunchy Roasty.
Out of Stiltman Vineyards. Yeah. And we've had some, like, cool wine from, like, not even California or, like, Old World. Like, we had an Australian wine recently that was like a Rosado, mm-hmm. which is like a baby red, and it was super plucky and tart and worked really well with this fried chicken we were eating, cut through that fat. Yeah, like that kind of stuff. I hopefully with, like, certain ad dollars, we can just use that to buy these bottles.
I know, right?
Because we're operating on a little bit of a budget right now. But also what we want this podcast to be is, like, accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, 2.5 is not a bad number. For me, 2.5, like, I'd have 2.5s to 3.5s in my fridge pretty constantly.
Because
for me, it's about, for me as a human, it's about accessibility. And when it comes to things that are, like, delicious, that are, like, in the 4 plus category, those are treats. And even Crunchy Roasty, which I adore, that was a $25 bottle, which is, although not a big deal with my budget, that's not something that I want to constantly be replenishing in my fridge. And also, I have to go to Specialty Wine Source for that, and usually I'm just trying to walk across the street.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that I'm considering when I'm, like putting things in my fridge. So a 2.5 to 3.5 wine in my fridge, totally normal.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say for me, like, it has to do with price point, because I do have a lot more, like, wine shops accessible to me,
mm-hmm.
Than you do over here.
Yeah.
I live in Hollywood, so it's, like, it's just too easy.
Yeah, you have, basically, they're all around there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just have to be careful with them, because they're not currently in my $0 budget.
Yeah. And a lot of those places, yeah, they do not offer things that are, like, cheapy. They start off at 20-ish and go up.
There's one nearby me that's doing, they're doing canned wine. That's actually, like, pretty good organic biodynamic canned wine.
Uh-huh.
I have to look at the producer again. I always forget. But it's like $6 a can, and it's like three drinks
in the can.
In the can.
So there's like 15 ounces in there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
I always get 2 because...
Yeah. Are they tall boy kind of cans? Are they like beer cans?
Like
bigger beer cans?
Maybe. I mean, like, they're rounder. They have a little more, like, volume around.
Okay.
Instead of, like, tall.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. I like it. I could look it up right now, but maybe not necessarily necessary.
Whatever.
But yeah, so like if I honestly, if going to me, right, rating this Gavi, I was going to say 1.75. But that's only because it's been open. I think if it were fresh, I would probably be closer to, like, 2.3.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time drinking it. Like, I'm going to drink it because... Because
that's hot.
But it's not necessarily what I want to be drinking right now, which is why I keep going back to that Albarino.
Yeah. I had, what was that wine I had recently from that one friend And I was like, I told them, I was like, I cannot. I was like, they called me pretentious, and I was like, no, I just literally can't.
I want to say it was ménage à trois, but no, like, probably not.
No, but it was
something in that.
It wasn't cake bread. It was cupcake.
Cupcake.
Like that. I okay, listen, like we will take sponsorship from anyone.
Oh yeah.
So like cupcake, like if you have a cool wine and you want to send it to us, like go for it. But I'm sorry, like, and also I can't say for sure, like we did not open this cupcake wine there. He was drinking it already, mm-hmm. but it touched my palate. And it was just so like there wasn't, I don't drink to get drunk. I drink for the journey, mm-hmm. right? And so I was straight. It wasn't doing anything for my palate. It wasn't making me think any thoughts. And I can't drink a red like that. Mm-mm. The red needs to be doing something.
It's just like a big fruit bomb.
It wasn't that even. It was like stale red wine.
Gross.
Right. It was like take a table red wine and then make it really boring. I'm like, who wants to drink that? The equivalent for a white wine would be I mean, people joke about Moscato all the time. It's just take something like really kind of like either with a white wine, take something like super buttery and oaky where it's like, mm-hmm. Or something that's like, headachey Moscato, mm-hmm. sugar. Those would be equivalents. I'm like, I cannot touch this.
Yeah. Yeah. There are certain times that I'm okay with Moscato, but I don't want to drink an entire glass of it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I'd rather have it as a dessert wine at the end of my meal a lot of the time rather than actual dessert wine because I hate dessert wine unless it's like expensive.
Yeah. Like a Jura or
yeah, like wine. Some kind of really interesting Sauternes.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I found the canned wine.
Oh, cool. What is it?
Yeah. It's Seeds and Skins.
I know that producer. Yeah. Yeah.
So 335 milliliters, so maybe a little over two glasses.
They're from Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we had it. For what was it, Thanksgiving? Or
one of the holidays.
Yeah. And it's great.
East Coast wine is something that Fiona and I need to study up more too because
it's still so new.
It's so new, but when we kind of looked down on it, not because it's actually looked downable, but like there are industry kind of thoughts about where wine is best produced based on vines,
mm-hmm.
based on age of vines, age of producer.
Well, in a lot of like, especially New York, New England is a little too high, like, in latitude.
Right.
It's like, but you, the same thing is said for England, and they're starting to produce some interesting bubbles.
And also, like, global warming's real, mm-hmm. and there was that podcast that said that the Northeast is, like, one of the places that has actually shown, like, the greatest change in, like, shorter winters and mm-hmm. more, like, agreeable winters, mm-hmm. which is scary, but hey, maybe they have cool wines coming out of there now.
Right.
But I think Virginia and Maryland are, like, is an interesting place. Mm-hmm. I do have a friend who has a friend who is working at, like, a vineyard tasting room in Virginia right now. And it seems to be successful. So I'm interested to see, like, where, like, I don't know, is it MDW? Is that, like, what it's, that area is called? Like, the D.C., Virginia, Maryland, kind of sure. tri-state. I don't know. I don't know. I don't ever live there.
Yeah.
I just thought
cards on the table. Both Anthony and I are from more north.
The real tri-state, which isn't trying to offend, but if it does, I'm sorry. It's we're from the Jersey, New York, Connecticut tri-state.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Pennsylvania. You cool, but
you don't quite make it.
Oh my. We're already like. Like taking shots, yeah. calling names,
crossing.
Yeah, we're really yeah. crossing off any opportunity we have to have listenership. Philly's cool. Philly,
yeah, everybody likes Philly, right?
Yeah, I mean that's where the Declaration of Independence was signed, right?
Sure.
And Pittsburgh's cool. Andy Warhol's also kind of canceled, but
yeah,
but
He's, I almost went to college in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and I'm watching Blown Away, which is the glass-blowing show on Netflix.
Great.
And they have the Pittsburgh, like, Glass Center, if that's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
They sent a representative over who, like, guest judged one of the episodes. And the winner from that episode got, like, a 5-day residency at the Pittsburgh Glass Center, which is apparently, on the show, they were saying it's, like, one of the best glass centers in the country.
Cool.
And that glass center is, like, focusing on making their center more, like, sustainable. Because, obviously, with glass, like, they have, like, a ton of furnaces, and they're using a lot of, like, glass, although is recyclable, like, glass can break. Like, you can either choose to throw it away and start anew, or you can, like, recycle the glass that you're utilizing. And they were saying that they reuse they renew their heat to boil their water to do other things, and it's just a certain mindfulness and awareness
That's
too.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love that show though. It's like it's this kind of like highly specific industry never have eyes on.
Yeah, it's like the Great British Bake Off, but for like a weird niche industry.
But
right?
The stakes are like definitely the dials turned up more than the British Bake Off because, for one, if I'm not mistaken, British Bake Off, there's a lot of like hobbyist bakers that enter that competition, right? These are people who are like names in the field. The cash prize isn't super high, like. RuPaul's Drag Race or an American Idol or something like that, or like America's Next Top Model, but it's for someone in that industry, it's still like high accolades, cash prize, definitely is like a, you know that there's some rich person out there looking to invest in blue chip art that watches that show and goes, oh, I'm gonna buy one of their glass structures and invest in that. So, you know, it's any publicity is good publicity. And the stakes are also high because they're working in these, like, they're doing projects that they are said that would take them weeks in short amounts of time.
Right.
And it's super hot. Like, they're sweating and they're working with, like, to be a glassblower, you need to have an assistant.
Right.
You can't just do it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think some of them they know, like this one guy, his assistant's his girlfriend who supports him, but I think some of them are given to them from the, like, hot shops. Like, I think there's a school that partners with the hot shop that they're working within. So, I don't know for sure, but I think that they're working with people that they kind of have to build a relationship with really quickly.
Yeah, I don't think it's people that they've brought from.
I don't think that's the, like, all majority of them. And I find that to be really difficult. Like, if glass broke, I'd be like, WTF.
Yeah.
And when glass breaks, like, that's, like, every time I'm, like, watching the episode and glass breaks and they only have 15 minutes left, it's like, oh, my God, they're going to go home.
No.
And sometimes they pull it out of their left pocket
back pocket. Where, like, on one of the episodes they made wine glasses and decanters?
I don't remember the first season too much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I watched an episode. It must have been that show, unless there's, like, a lot of these glass-blowing shows. But which, you know, it's like...
I feel like there's a surplus of glass-blowing shows
just
on TV.
So many. Netflix has just greenlit all of them.
Netflix has one. Hulu has one. HBO Max has one.
Right.
And they're all fighting. Yeah.
But I was watching this one episode, and they were making, like, wine glasses and decanters. And there was one person in particular who was like, I'm going to make black glasses and a black decanter. And I was like, that's dumb.
Yeah, that's so dumb. Color of the wine matters so much.
When you're drinking, you know, like, it's like eating. It's smell, taste, color.
Yeah.
Feel.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think only, they were saying this, so don't quote me on anything. Like, even the wine.
Don't quote us on anything.
Like, we're not doctors. We're not media professionals.
Although people do pay me to pick out wine for them.
Yeah, no, I do provide service, and people do tell me you're on the money.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying that I'm not really fact-checking this. This
right.
is all me and Fiona just enjoying our time together drinking wine and chatting. We thought maybe other people would enjoy this too. But anyway, with glass blowing, I heard on one of those episodes, I'm pretty sure, that only clear glass can be recycled. That kind of sounds wrong now that I think about it, with the way our recycling centers are set up. But I think clear glass might be more easily recyclable. Yeah.
Well, because you can put it in, like, en masse into, like, a big thing. Yeah. As opposed to, like, if you're recycling, like, colored glass, it, like, it can't go into the big bin with all of the other glass.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, if you were doing dark glass, not only would it, like, affect, like, your purview of the wine, but, like, also you might not be, like, as sustainable as, you know, you could be. Mm-hmm. Hey everybody, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Feel free to follow us anywhere you listen to podcasts and on Instagram at ThatSomTalk. That's ThatSomTalk. And we will be seeing y'all soon. Keep drinking wine, y'all.